You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Monday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. It is a critical Monday, Andy. I don't think you can put this on a 1 to 10 scale about what begins today. Free agency, 3 o'clock Pacific is the time that teams can contact free agents, because it hasn't been happening before.
No, it has been complete radio silence between these honorable free agents, their honorable agents, and all of the honorable execs around this league. And Brian, that type of honesty and integrity is exactly why you and I decided to devote our lives towards covering this league.
That's right. Basically, everyone's been tampering except Mitch Kupchak. And so we find the results at 3:01 Pacific.
This ain't a dirty sport like cockfighting, Brian, or something like that. Like this is where people with, character hang out. That's exactly what we're a part of.
All right, so much to get into. We are going to talk a lot about some of the names that we think the Lakers could credibly go get, or at the very least will be interested in trying to get, as free agency opens 3 p.m. again, Pacific, Monday afternoon. So much work for the Lakers to do to try to fill this thing out following the Westbrook deal. We've had the weekend to think about it, to marinate, to stew in the Russell Westbrook deal. I got to be honest with you, I have not stopped thinking about it. I haven't, Andy, stopped trying. I'm like all over Twitter trying to find different analyses.
I have listened to every single podcast possible. Like I find just the reaction to this and the analysis of it and the different ways people are trying to project what the hell is going to end up happening with this team? Absolutely fascinating. It is like NBA heroin for me. I cannot inject.
I can't get enough. I cannot. Nope. There's literally no Russell Westbrook content right now that I'm not interested in. And hopefully the same is for you out there, because, we appreciate that.
Well, based on the numbers for the last 72 hours or so, they sure are.
We don't know how Westbrook is going to impact the team's offense. We do know how he's going to impact traffic around content creators. And so Lakers.
Sending Rob Blink a fruit basket.
At least with all the fancy fruits, too. Mm-hmm. There's some stuff that came up over the weekend. I don't even know if we can get into all of it today. Thankfully, it is just endlessly fascinating, this trade that they've made and the position the Lakers have put themselves in. But one of the things that came up a lot in some of the analysis, I think particularly among the national columnists, after Brad Turner at the LA Times did a great story with some really deep reporting on how this big three came together, reporting that they met at LeBron's house a couple weeks ago, talked through this possibility and how it could look, what it would look like. And the question, Andy, of ego, guys being willing to sacrifice and give up, came up in BT's story, again, extremely well reported. And then in a lot of columns around this, three big egos, big, dominant players on the floor, can they all coexist? Can they give and all? Was this something that you were really concerned about, the question of ego, when the trade was announced?
It was not high on my list. I would be lying if I said, ego in a very broad sense of just the willingness to sacrifice because you've decided you have to be among the sacrificers. Yeah, of course, because we've covered enough superstar laden teams to know that that can be an issue. I mean, we saw that with the 2013 Lakers, and heading into, that was the This Is Going to Be Fun team with Kobe and Powell and Dwight and Steve Nash, Antoine Jameson is the sixth man, Meta, everybody. I mean, that was a deep,
yeah. Deep spoiler roster. Alert, though, it turned out not to be fun.
No, but one of the things, though, that was really interesting about that was how all of those guys entered training camp talking about how not only were they willing to make the different sacrifices that everybody was going to have to in order to involve everyone, but also, too, that they were looking forward to it. Like, they thought this was going to be great. They were all part of the same goal. And they all came to realize, and a lot of them talked about it openly, saying it and doing it are two different things. So in that sense, I think you would be completely naive not to think about it at all. But in terms of like, I'm the man ego, like the idea of this is my team and you need to file behind me because ultimately I'm the alpha male. Like, you know, the Kobe's famous, I eat first, Pau eat second, everybody else, you know, go fight at the buffet.
Right. It was, I eat first. I go back for seconds if I'm still hungry.
Yeah.
Then Pau eats. Then I go back for thirds.
And hopefully all y'all aren't that hungry.
Right. Did you guys order out because the food's gone?
Right. Like, I think you would be naive not to think about that at all. But the truth is, what strikes me more about this team in terms of the way they interact together and the adjustments that different guys are going to have to make, and I think this is mostly about Russ, just because he's the newer guy, but also his particular strengths and weaknesses. But just in general, the idea of, are you capable of making these adjustments? Do you know how to? Do you know how to rewire your own instincts? Because that can be extremely difficult for these guys to do.
Okay, I want to stay there for a second because I can be honest with you. I didn't think about the ego thing. I was like, you know what? It's going to be, and I use Brooklyn in some ways as a template. Oh, too many baskets. There's not enough basketballs. Too many. When James Harden shoves his way out of Houston to go there, you need to trade me there. Of course he's going to go out and he's going to be on his best behavior and he's going to, you got to win, you got to do all that stuff. When you're not winning, it gets harder and we'll see how that turns out. But as it did turn out, Harden was a guy who said, okay, you know what? I will shoot less. I will be a distributor. I will get 26 rebounds and 440 assists, but I might only take 16 shots a game, 15 shots a game when everybody's healthy, the four times that happened. The difference is between that and this is even if James Harden isn't taking shots, you still have to guard him as if he is and as if he will, because the skill set is there. So I agree with you. And like, there's a challenge there for Russ to be like, you know what? I got to be efficient. I'm going to do all this stuff. I mean, whatever it is, all this stuff, you know, I'm not going to turn the ball over. I'm going to be better with my shot selection and all that stuff. But my question becomes, it goes back to the basketball stuff for me. What does that look like? What is Russell Westbrook, who isn't constantly putting pressure on defenses with the threat of his scoring, which is really what it comes down to? This, the playmaking is built off that and all that stuff, because you know, if he's off ball, look what the Lakers did a couple years ago against Houston. They ignored him. No amount of selflessness is going to make Westbrook a good three-point shooter.
No,
so but what does it look like if Russ dials it back? Is he the same guy? Are you getting Russell Westbrook in that case?
Well, I think you're getting the same guy ultimately. I mean, they're not going to completely deprogram and reprogram Russell Westbrook. That's not possible.
Right. I'm not talking about
right. 15, but to answer your right, no, it's not even the amount of shots. I'm talking about the way he plays. Mm-hmm. But in terms of what I think it looks like, I think at times it's going to be him being more of an active guy off ball as opposed to, you know, spotting up. Obviously, he's not a threat doing that. If he committed to constantly moving off ball, to constantly cutting off ball, which is, by the way, something people have talked about with Russ for years. Like,
we've never seen it, but
I mean, it doesn't take a basketball genius to understand what the threat of that would be. Russell Westbrook cutting suddenly, full head of steam, LeBron James over here,
Westbrook constantly moving, right. Anthony Davis, good passer, right. All that stuff.
It's not complicated in some ways, not always, but in some ways to envision what it is. Again, it starts turning into, are you capable of making those changes? Are you capable of rewiring your instincts? And then everybody is going to have to adjust in some ways, if for no other reason than to keep Russ happy with the adjustments he's making. Everybody is going to have to change a little bit while they're out there in terms of the big three. Everybody's going to have to recalibrate their expectations.
Yeah, it's from just talking about it, like through the playoffs with Rudy Gobert, and then it became a thing with Ben Simmons. Coaches are so good now, and film is so technical, and everybody is so capable of attacking real, I'm not talking about, you know, there are things that even, you know, Kevin Durant is better at some things than others. He has relative weaknesses. But when you are a guy who has very pronounced positives and very pronounced weaknesses, coaching in the NBA is so good now that teams will relentlessly attack those weaknesses in the postseason. And you have to figure out a way to counter that. And so whether you're talking Gobert, whether you're talking Simmons, whether you're talking Russell Westbrook, these are guys who are in that category now of obviously excellent players who are obviously and critically problematic. And so for me, this puzzle that the Lakers have put themselves into of how you maximize Russ while not minimizing some of the strengths that LeBron has, some of the advantages you get with LeBron and AD, that's going to be a lot of the push-pull this year. And, you know, there's going to be a regular season process of that, and then there's going to be a playoff process of that. And it's going to be incredibly interesting to watch how they do it, because there are tons of ways that Westbrook is going to be really beneficial for the Lakers.
They ultimately made this more difficult, at least on paper, than need be. Now, it may turn out that the difficulty that they very, you know, aggressively look to undertake could be worth it. And it could be one of those things where it's harder because the end result, that answer that you arrive on when it works, is so damn difficult for everybody else in the league to deal with that it's worth the effort. It's worth pounding that rock over and over and over until you eventually bleed it. Even though, you know, there's a saying, you can't bleed a rock. You find a way to bleed that rock. And then
we're
eventually,
we're so damn good at the stuff we're good at that it doesn't matter what you do, you can't stop
us. There is no question they made this more complicated than, say, the Buddy Hield route, which by a lot of accounts was not just real. Like there were
The Kings thought that was
Kings
done.
Thought it was a done deal. Buddy Hield thought it was a done deal. I think Kuz,
Michael Carroll, Thompson thought it was a done deal.
Yeah, like
he's sad.
Everybody thought this was going to end up happening, and that would have been a much easier, and even despite the star power difference between Russ and Buddy Hield and the overall talent discrepancy between Westbrook and Hield, that may have actually been a higher upside.
Well, we'll go through a lot of this.
The simplicity.
It's that trade maximizes LeBron. That says, what are we going to do to maximize LeBron's skill set? This one is, let's bring on more star power. And it's a difference in philosophy. Cannot wait until the 6th or the 7th or the 8th, whenever it is that this deal becomes official. And Rob Pelinka speaks to the media about it, because that's going to be an incredibly interesting press conference. But you had something, Andy, that I think is really interesting before we, and we're going to get to the free agency questions here in a second. But before we do that, you had a really interesting point about why they chose Westbrook as opposed to a Buddy Hield route that I think is worth talking about. I know you do as well, and we'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. Bars covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew, not like the deadbeat ones that are just a chore. You have to map out your entire day just to get through it. That's not a Built Bar. They taste great. They're awesome for health conscious people, whether you're trying to have a low sugar, low calorie, high protein, high fiber diet. They're great for keto folks, and they taste more delicious than ever. You got the 12 original flavors like raspberry, coconut almond, salted caramel, banana bread, new flavors like cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, cookies and cream. They're perfect for just people who love things that taste great and you don't get bored feeling like you're eating the same thing over and over. So go to builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15. You get 15% off your first order. Again, the promo code is LOCKED15 for 15% off at builtbar.com.
All right. So, again, we're going to get to some of our names. 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific time, free agency begins. And keep in mind, nothing has been happening to this point. So everybody's got to make phone calls and look up people's numbers. It could take a minute. But so we'll get to some of our names that we think are worth watching over Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, as this goes forward. But before we do, you mentioned before we were going to the break, like the Lakers had a Buddy Hield deal there that would have been presumably one where they get to keep Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and their pick. You presumably in that scenario, you re-sign Dennis Schroeder and you move on from there. They went with the Westbrook thing. Why? Some people call it a panic move. Some people call it an overreaction, an overcorrection. Why do you think they did it?
I think this is just who they are, man. I think this is just who this organization is, like as an ethos. I did not see this as a panic move. Like, we heard plenty of people like Rob Pelinka, Frank Vogel, LeBron, Anthony Davis, up and down the organization, guys who matter, I think sincerely understand the idea that with LeBron banged up and AD not even there, there's only so far they can go. And, you know, while I'm sure it prompted, rightly, an assessment of what they had, Brian, like, I don't even see this as a massive overcorrection, even if it ultimately ends up being that. I just think this is who the Lakers are, man. They are always about stars first, second, and third, and they will always fall back on that identity. Like, Magic was brought in a few years ago to run the organization, even though he really had no business doing it. Like, just for better and worse, this is a star effort organization, and that they are always going to be just attracted to that star power in terms of composing themselves, in terms of just reinforcing their own identity.
Yeah, it's interesting because I agree with you 100%, not a panic move. I think, you know, panic is way too strong a word for it. I think there is a sort of an element of overcorrecting for the things that they wanted to try to fix last year that didn't get fixed, in terms of lightening the load on LeBron and fixing the second unit and those non-LeBron minutes and all that. It did not work the way it was supposed to, and Westbrook will make that better. They also overcorrected in trading away all their shooting. That's a different thing. But, you know, when we were talking about this, you know, before the show started, I think you're probably, you know, like, what's the principle, like the most obvious answer?
Occam's razor.
The most obvious answer is probably the answer. That may be it. Like, it just may be that the lure of Russell Westbrook. Now, look, I'd be lying also too. Something else we talked about, if I didn't think in the back of my head, like, there's a part of Rob Pelinka that I think kind of relishes this idea of, like, you know what, I'm going to do the thing that right now nobody thinks can work, and I'm going to make it work. I think there is an element perhaps of that there, or at the very least, I am concerned that there is an element of that there. But I think by and large, you're probably right.
Yeah.
I think, you know, LeBron, there isn't a basketball situation LeBron thinks can't work, especially if you're handing him somebody as good as Westbrook. It's not that, again, he does not suck. I mean, don't, you know, for people who are polarized on one side of this, LeBron thinks he can make anything work if you give him enough talent. He'll figure this out. I think LeBron probably enjoys the mental puzzle of what this is going to have to look like. But ultimately, yeah, you're probably right. It's like, you know what? Get me Russell Westbrook. We'll figure out the rest. LA loves stars. He's from here. It's a great story. Let's do this.
Yeah. I mean, and again, there are basketball reasons to think that you can maximize the things that you do well. But just when people look at this situation and look at the glaring issues that need to be addressed, and in some ways we're already there and now are magnified by bringing in Westbrook, and go, like, what? Like, why? Why would you do this? You know, I think there could be a multitude of different reasons for it. Basketball, like you said, maybe it's just a reflection of Rob Pelinka's thinking or how he wants to present himself. What I mean, you know, for
sort of a counterculture kind of thing, or
maybe, you know. I mean, you know, the truth is, Pelinka, his first few years of really running the thing from a full offseason onward, he'd always gone after stars. And, you know, Paul George ultimately didn't show up. Kawhi Leonard ultimately didn't show up.
Right, but that was when they didn't have enough of him. Now they needed him. They, you know, theoretically, they had enough stars.
Sure.
You don't have.
There's a certain school of thought that you can never have enough.
That's true. And so let's look at this before we have a lot of names that we want to throw out there. Again, 3 p.m. Pacific is when all of this starts. Philosophically, one name that is still out there as a guy who would take less or could take less, and this is the only way he'd come, is if he wants to win a title. It's from LA, and he says, give me $6 million a year, give me your full mini mid or whatever it is, and I'll come. And that's DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, and to clarify, Brian, just to put a brighter point on this, it's not the only way he would come. It's the only way he can come.
Right.
They can't do it any other way.
Sign and trade for him. If you do him out in a sign and trade, the Lakers become hard capped, and like it, there's just no way to make this math work at this point. So, now if you have the opportunity to bring in DeRozan with this one large exception that they have. This to me illustrates kind of the bind that the Lakers are in. They've already gone balls out for like talent over fit in some ways. DeRozan adds a ton more talent and just leans into the fit problems. Like DeRozan's one of the only guys out there who is like a lesser three-point shooter or equally non-useful in that regard as a floor spacer as Westbrook.
There are not many wings of his caliber and profile who represent less of a threat. I mean, he's less of a threat than Westbrook in that he will take fewer of them. So he's less threatening to the team that he's on in terms of the amount of threes. Like Westbrook is much more of a three-point threat.
Great ball mover, efficient scorer at the rim, gets to the free throw line, hits at a great rate there. Excellent mid-range player offer. Like you want to talk about an offense that if you could figure out how to do it and like guys who can all, you know, big four of dudes who can all pass all, but it doesn't really make sense.
No,
you still got to sign. If DeMar DeRozan will come to you for $6 million, you just say in for a penny, in for a pound at that point, right?
It depends on who your other options are. Like if say
Reggie Bullock,
I think you have to take Reggie Bullock because Reggie Bullock at that point gives you the three pointers that you need, also gives you the defense that
incredible defense.
And he's easier to just to slide into what you're doing. And Westbrook, between Westbrook and LeBron, you're going to have a lot of what DeMar would be doing, presumably with the second unit. Like I
let me throw one more name. Right. Let me throw one more name at you. And then we'll move on from this. And this is another guy who is, I think, gettable realistically at the larger mid-level or even smaller than that, perhaps, or some of it, a portion of it. Rudy Gay.
I think you sign Rudy Gay.
Over DeMar.
Because
he can stretch the floor a little bit.
Because again, he gives you a better version of what you actually need because Rudy Gay can still do some scoring. He's definitely a three-point threat. I think his defense has gotten better over the years. He's certainly better than DeMar DeRozan. If nothing else, you'd rather plug Rudy Gay into a defense than DeRozan. So I think Gay actually starts satisfying more of the needs that you have than DeRozan. Where I think it starts getting more interesting, and we'll get into some of these names, is if you talk about a guy who is a solid enough three-point shooter, but doesn't really do as much out there and you can't count on him to put up that type of volume or where you start really getting into discrepancies of how dynamic they are as a player or, you know, how much you think you can keep them on the floor.
Or they can shoot, but they're terrible defensively.
Right.
And you can't keep them on the floor, i.e. Ben McLemore.
Right. Exactly. You know, somebody like Ben McLemore may end up back, but he's not going to be getting full taxpayer mid-level exception money.
Part of what they need to do, and we'll move on here, but part of what they need to do is not just find shooting. They need that. They need it up and down the roster. They need to find shooting that can be on the floor with the big three. And the big three, and presumably Alex Caruso, who's going to be badly needed to provide defense next to Westbrook, because As much as you want to make LeBron's life easier on offense, which is what Westbrook does, you don't want to double down and undo all of that good work by making his life that much harder on defense. And right now, they've downgraded, you know, Schroeder to Westbrook is a downgrade defensively. And so, you know, you have to make sure you don't put too much pressure on LeBron and AD by pairing that group with another very suspect perimeter defender in that way. So you need to keep Alex Caruso around. You need to keep Alex Caruso around. Andy, what do you need to do with Alex Caruso?
Keep him around. I mean, I'll say this right now. I'm sure we're going to talk about this during the week. When it comes to these negotiations, Caruso has the Lakers by the Manscaped balls at this point. Like, unless you're talking about an offer
is presumably smooth ball.
Well, I meant he can make them manscape their balls. Yeah. Like, he's not going to have them by his own balls, Brian. No. That doesn't make sense. You're not going to squeeze your own balls to make a point.
You know, like, what? What if he wanted to manscape Rob as a condition of doing it? Like, he'd have to do it, right?
I think at that point, Pelinka turns it down, and I understand why. That's like an that feels like an HR violation.
Probably. You know,
I don't think Brian, in 2021, I don't think you can do that.
I don't think you can do that.
I don't
think you have to think about it.
You certainly cannot, even if technically you would be forcing your boss to do it. I just don't think you can do that. I don't actually think in today's climate you can do that. It really shouldn't have been allowed in any climate.
But you have to admit, it is a tremendous power play.
Oh, it would be. And
tremendous, but they have to bring back. I mean, they have
tremendously distasteful, and I think honestly, I think a little less.
He didn't seem like the type, but power play. They have to bring back Caruso. They really have to bring back THT. They really need to bring back both of these guys. But let's talk about some other names that could pop up, if not on Monday, through the week, because some of what the Lakers are doing, signing guys at veterans minimums, you end up having to wait to see what the market looks like. But let's throw out some names. We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online, the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing. You can track all the action at Bet Online this week. As always, tons of sports action on the go. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, UFC, MMA. Before the next pitch, head over to Bet Online on your laptop, your mobile device. Check out all the great sporting news, sign up bonuses, contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game. So head to the website, use your mobile device, sign up today, receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using the promo code LOCKEDON. Bet Online, your online sportsbook expert.
So, Andy, where are you going to look for what the Lakers need? They need wings. They need spacers, and they need some defense. So they don't have a lot of stuff to work with. I think they will try their hardest to do some sort of Dennis Schroeder sign and trade. Most people around the league think that is going to be difficult. And because teams really have no incentive to help out the Lakers.
Well, I don't see it so much as helping the Lakers as much as, if you really value Schroeder, you know, willingness to pay him what he wants. But
right,
sure.
But I mean, the point being is most teams that will be able to get him will either be able to get him for what they have available or probably aren't necessarily interested. Like, you have to want, there has to be a need to create, a created need for a sign and trade.
In a very, very point guard heavy free agent market, frankly, I don't know if Schroeder's good enough to create that.
Right. And I saw some news on over the weekend, Mike Conley looking at maybe $20 million a year to stay in Utah. That depresses Schroeder's value. So the more teams that can sign him into their full mid-level, for example, makes it that much less likely you can engineer a sign and trade. But let's assume that they can't do something like that with their, that leaves them the ability to re-sign their own guys. Caruso, THD, you have to do it.
You have to.
And then you have the taxpayer mid-level, about $6 million a year, and then veterans minimum guys. So with that in mind, who are some names that you are looking at as potential realistic and useful options for the Lakers as this all kicks off this afternoon?
Well, I mean, we already talked about Rudy Gay as a possibility. He's been linked to the Lakers, and I think it makes a lot of sense. You're going to see a lot of Melo.
That'd be a great.
And I think Melo feels like, you know, after years and years of the Lakers.
I feel like that's almost a slam dunk that Melo at the minimum. I mean, he could make more somewhere else, a little bit more. Played well enough, but that feels to me to be a done deal almost.
If you want, actually, I would say if you want Melo on the Lakers, you should be happy that everything's gone sideways in Portland, because he, by all appearances and everything I had heard, was really happy there. But if it looks like they're going to be a shit show, I doubt he wants to, you know, end his.
And I like it. He fills a positional need. They need guys up front. He's become a credible 3-point shooter over the last couple of years and really seems to have leaned into that role. Yeah. It's not impossible for me to visualize lineups where he might actually be on the floor at the end of games, where you could use him some games, depending on the matchups. And meanwhile, he is still a useful second unit guy. And by all accounts, just a great dude to have at this point in his career. wants to win all that.
For all the controversies that Melo's had in his career, some that I think were overblown, some that were by his own doing, he is, by all accounts, beloved in locker rooms.
Like, so I think that to me feels like something that probably will happen.
As far as names along the wings that maybe you haven't heard as much about or aren't as high profile, we talked about James Ennis on one of the Locked On Lakers YouTube episodes we had. And
keep an eye on that, because as these guys get signed, every time something happens, we're going to try to get something up during the day so you don't have to wait until the next day to get some sort of reaction with us, you know, for that. So that we're going to do our best to keep doing that.
And Bobby Marks over at ESPN, a former exec with the Nets, he does a great job breaking down salary stuff for the site. He broke down basically all the free agents in the league and what he pegged as their potential salaries. He had James Ennis as a league minimum guy. I thought he'd be somewhere between the taxpayer MLE and the minimum. So that maybe could be right. A really good value along the way.
And again, that's based a lot on, you know, sort of formulaic value and all that kind of stuff and the amount of people there. I agree with you. I think Ennis at a league minimum would be a no-brainer, but probably he's a great example of somebody that you're not going to sign him on Monday for the veterans minimum.
No, if he's your 301 call things.
Well, no, I don't mean that. I mean, if you could get him at 301 for the veterans minimum, great.
Oh, okay.
Sure, I mean, he's not going to agree to that on the 301 on Monday.
One would think not. Torrey Craig is another guy that I think could maybe, he's not a great 3-point shooter, but he can defend. And right. I think this team is going to need more optionality with defense. They don't profile, at least as currently constructed, as well defensively. You never know. And Phoenix has a lot of bills coming up with potentially re-signing Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, campaign. So Craig could maybe fall through the cracks. And Phoenix, this is important, does not have early bird rights on him. So I think that could be a possibility. Moving further down the front court, I don't expect Brooklyn lets him go. I would love to have Blake Griffin for the full taxpayer mid-level. I think Blake Griffin would be fantastic on this team. He makes a lot of sense.
I worry about the defense a lot there.
You know what? If you watched him in the playoffs with Brooklyn against Milwaukee, he was way better than I thought he'd be. And he, remember, Brian, when we were talking at the buyout market, he was the free agent that I wanted the most. And I think he could have been a really good wheel greaser for the second unit. His outside shot has gotten much better over the years. He's a really, really good playmaker.
But in theory, some of that need is mitigated a little bit because Westbrook presumably is going to take at least some of that time with the second unit and, you know, running that group. But yeah, I mean, you could still use that as a skill set. There's no question.
Another guy that I thought about.
Also, I agree with you, by the way. Brooklyn's not going to let him go.
No, I don't think so either. But just, you know, there's been talk about the Nets trying to bang out extensions for all three of their stars. You know, their tab could start getting pretty hefty, and they do not have early bird rights on, or they don't have early bird rights on Blake Griffin too.
Correct.
So there's only so much they can potentially offer him. Another guy that, you know, for like the four or the five, he's not ideal for a mid-level, but if he would be willing to take a deeper discount for a ring, if Denver moved off him, is Paul Millsap, I think could be a decent fit for this team. Defensively, he's smart. He's
pretty big discount though. He's probably worth
it. It would be a big discount. I mean, we're talking about ring chasers. I mean, ultimately, and I would be surprised if he couldn't get a better offer, but you know, if Milwaukee can't pay for Bobby Portis and he can't get more than mid-level money, or he just really gets a taste of winning.
On this Bobby Marks chart, which I think tends to undervalue what some of these guys are going to get, he's listed at between 4 to 6. I mean, I agree with you. It'd be an interesting use of that $6 million.
Because he plays defense and can shoot.
Yeah.
And again, his
positionality works.
Yep. And then the last guy, do not be surprised at all if Dwight Howard is back on this team. Dwight or JaVale, one or the other. It would not shock me one bit. And they're both minimum guys.
I feel like JaVale feels more likely to me than Dwight.
I can see that.
But it both seem possible. Let me throw some names out at you that I think, you know, again, day one names. I don't expect the Lakers to be wildly active on day one because, again, they are to some degree waiting for guys to fall through the cracks. I think Melo is a name that both will come up, make sense, and feels inevitable. We talked about Rudy Gay. We talked about Ennis. I think Tony Snell is low-key somebody who could come in and help them in terms of a little bit of three and a little bit of D and can play on the wing at 6'6". So I think that matters. George Niang is a big who can shoot and that you wait around. He's a 40% three-point shooter. He's a guy who played meaningful minutes on Utah last year that I could see, certainly again, like let them letting go. I don't think he solves my problem of guy who can be on the floor with the big three in big crunch time minutes, but I do think he could play on this team. So there's that. As far as I know, at least by metrics, he's not a bad defender. He didn't hurt them. No. I'd be lying if I said I had a lot of deep knowledge of the defensive prowess of George Niang, but anyway, the guy that I keep going back to, and I think he's going to be way outpriced for the $6 million and is a massive risk, is Otto Porter Jr. And on some charts, he's up around 9, 10, 11 million in a very shallow wing market. I think there'll be a lot of interest in him. But this chart from Bobby Marks has him at 4-6. And so if that is in the range of where he ends out to be, some people are offering 6, some people are offering 7, some people are offering 8. If he's not getting 12, if he's not getting 14, I think the Lakers could be an appealing destination for him because the ability to come in and play with, I mean, you want to talk about a perfect fit, good defender, shoots very well from three-point range, very low usage offensive guy who can still be useful for you. The skill set is perfect. The injury risk is ridiculous. He's played 90 games in the last 2 years. And so I would be tempted because he could help them a lot if he's healthy. But man, that is a risky play for your one big exception.
Yeah. I would be extremely nervous about bringing him in because especially with these issues that you're talking about that the Lakers need to fill, and they are trying to fill them through these very limited means, availability starts becoming as big of a thing as the actual skills that you're looking to address.
Huge deal. And by the way, they traded away a lot of availability in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
Yes, they did.
And to a lesser extent, but still generally Kuz. So,
yeah, I mean, hell, they traded it away with Tress.
Harrell.
I mean,
Harrell was a right.
So, I mean, you need to really get your medicals in order if you are going to sign Otto Porter Jr.
Oh, my God. That would be a coup.
Oh, yeah.
At $6 million.
Oh, he's perfect. But that one big-ass red flag is like the color of Mars. It's bright.
It's very bright and very red.
Yeah, and very scary.
All right. So, obviously, we're going to go down a bunch of names. There's a bunch of dudes out there. But the trick that the Lakers are trying to do here, where they're threading the needle between got to fill out the roster, have very few options to do it with. And, again, it's not that you just need a shooter. You sign a backup point guard who can shoot. That's great. I don't have an objection to it, but it's not going to help you in fourth quarters unless you can play these guys with the big three. So that's the riddle that Pelinka needs to solve.
Can't say enough. You're going to solve part of that riddle by re-signing Alex Caruso. So re-sign Alex Caruso.
Right, but if Caruso's not, but we'll talk about this week, I think. They need Caruso to become a really good, sure, dependable three-point shooter. Like a really, he has zero. He's gonna playing at the end of games next to Westbrook, LeBron, and AD. He's gonna have zero offensive responsibilities in terms of doing anything with the offense. He's gonna need if he became a knockdown 38%, 40% consistent three-point shooter, that is a game changer.
Yes, it is
for this team.
But here's the thing though. Even if he doesn't, we've already seen just how valuable he is and just how winning he is not being that guy alongside LeBron. So
totally agree. They have to bring him back anyway. I just mean by that, you now have to find that skill set at a different position.
You do. I think also so you they may not. End up,
you may be needing to find it at the 3 or the 4, and those might be your only choices.
That's I think they're also going to end up finding it in Wes. I would be very, very surprised. I've been saying this for a few months.
Yeah.
I would be very surprised if they don't bring back Wes Matthews. Frankly, I think they should bring back Wes.
I think he's got to be on their list. All right.
I'd be so, really surprised.
So much more that we're going to be getting into over the course of the next week through, you know, until free agency, I guess, is done, or the Lakers have a roster. We're going to be at this. Lakers on YouTube for all the instant reaction when things happen. We will get stuff up as fast as is humanly possible. And yeah, just come back tomorrow, man, because it's not going to get any less interesting. We'll see you on Tuesday.